The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There is so much peace of mind that comes when you can sense that your money is aligned with your values and convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there's really, really peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. And there is so much really just anxiety when that doesn't happen, when that alignment just isn't present.
That's right, James. And you know, that's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary.
That's right. Yeah, and when you're confused, you simply don't make good decisions.
Nope.
And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be. It can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 16.
Yeah, chugging along.
That's right. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. Each week in the first part of our show, we'll talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events that we discuss actually mean.
Yeah, and then part of the way through the show, we get to our weekly puzzle, which we love. Yay, the weekly puzzle.
And Joe's good at them.
Joe's good. And
he's batting 500 probably.
That's just a brain teaser that we'll share with you. And if we don't know if the puzzle is actually interesting, you know, to anybody, but it's interesting to us, so we have some fun with that. Well,
yeah. So, James, what are some topics, you know, going on right now in the financial world? What are some financial news headlights?
So I don't know if this is really a headline or not, but the dollar stores, if you've noticed, like Dollar General, Dollar Tree, their stocks are getting pounded, like down 30% for the year and so on. So why is that? Well, I mean, they're missing their profit targets for the year because
people are getting squeezed.
Drum roll, their main customer, right, doesn't have the financial capacity. I mean, when inflation comes along and takes away purchasing power, they just can't go shopping.
No.
I mean, it is what it is, right? And so the dollar store's primary market segment is just struggling with this inflation thing.
Yeah, their CEO noted that their average customer makes about $35,000 a year. And they're feeling that financial strain, and they're less able to stretch their budgets.
Yeah. So what's really interesting is we're hearing, at least, that, wow, inflation is headed to the right spot. It's not going backwards, though, apparently.
It's just, remember before I said it's like a car not going 65, now it's only going 45.
Now it's only,
but it's still going down the road.
It's still going down the road. I mean, inflation is still a thing. It is cutting into purchasing power, and it's showing up right in front of us in these dollar stores. Well, you know, there's another dynamic too, I think, you know, because you have like your Walmarts and Targets are being more aggressive in trying to capture market share that otherwise the dollar stores would be competing for. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm not sure strategically how, I mean, let's say that Walmart and Target do pick up a lot of market share from the people that would otherwise be shopping at a dollar store. I mean, somewhere along the way, that has to impact Walmart's customer base.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And that article I was reading that you shared with me, the dollar store folks are getting squeezed. And the folks that normally wouldn't shop at Walmart or Target, they're now looking at those places and looking for bargains.
And looking for bargains.
So inflation affects people differently.
That's
some are
right.
getting squeezed, the other sees opportunity.
That's right. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we promised we would start talking about things that were, you know, a little more positive. But this is a real thing. It's not going away. The inflation issue is not going away. Did you see the headline? Volkswagen is thinking about closing a plant over in Germany.
Yeah.
Volkswagen. I mean, Volkswagen is like one of the big deals not just around the world. I mean, when I think Volkswagen, I'm thinking like, you know, VW Bug, Herbie. Did you ever see the Herbie? Yeah. Okay. That wasn't in our outline, but you know, everybody knows VWs, right? And
it was my dad's first car, a Beetle. Back in the 70s,
had
two of them, actually.
Yeah, my brother and I, when we were teenagers, we both had VW Bugs.
Mm.
And my brother was like, you know, the mechanical type and everything. And we took these VW Bugs apart, and then we were going to like soup them up. You know? How can you soup up a VW Bug? But we took them apart, we put them back together again, and we discovered that we had enough parts to make three VW Bugs.
Oh.
I mean, we took apart two, and we had enough parts left over to make a whole nother VW Bug.
Sure.
Okay. Anyway.
It's like when I put it together, IKEA furniture, and I have a handful of screws and parts. Like,
that's right.
Where did that go to?
Well, that has nothing to do with financial news. But VW, no, I mean, it's a big, big deal. So apparently.
Yeah. I mean, that could impact the jobs in the German economy. I mean, there's a trickle-down effect there. But, company sees that necessary to address the challenges that they face.
And I think, you know, the Chinese are being very aggressive with pricing on electric vehicles, and that's impacting that story. So, that's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that come across. Did you see about the power outages in Venezuela?
No.
Apparently, we're recording this on Thursday. What's today? The 7th?
5th.
September the 5th. Friday last week, apparently there was a power outage that impacted the entire nation of Venezuela.
Mm.
And, you know, so you wonder, well, why in the world does that matter? Well, Venezuela has a significant known oil reserve. So if suddenly the whole nation is out, that impacts oil shipments.
Yeah, they can't pump it.
They can't pump it.
Mm.
I mean,
if
you're just out suddenly. So, you know, these things tend to all add up and create ripple effects. And
we're not pumping it out like we used to, so we can't really offset it at the moment.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so one thing leads to another, and then all of a sudden you have market volatility and so on and so forth. But we usually don't, you know, we think, inflation and Fed policy and so on. But these different stories that happen around the globe have impacts in not just the global markets, but they have impacts right here in the States.
Sure.
As well.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the Suez Canal. I mean, we can go on and on.
We can go on and on. That's right. I think there's still like 50 ships each day that are going through there. But that's down a little bit from what it had been because of the, you know, the armed conflict going
People
on.
People finding alternatives.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's exactly right.
More expensive ones, too.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on around the world. The Purchasing Managers Index for August reported in this week, and it reported in at like 47.6.
Hmm.
Or was it 47.2? Either it was 47 something.
I don't have my notes. Is that an increase? Or?
Well, it's about the same, but the point is, it's less than 50.
Mm-hmm.
And anything less than 50 is contractionary. So we've been in less than 50 for almost 2 years, which means that, you know, manufacturing has been contracting in our country for almost 2 years. The way I read it,
I also seen another jobs revision yesterday on the news, in addition to the 2023. But I think I seen a revision for last month.
Oh.
To where actually jobs were down, And I think another factor was up, and I was like, oh, boy, this is exactly what we're talking about.
Right. Well, the 2023 revision, was that the one where they said,
oops, 3 million?
818,000 jobs got revised away.
From like 2.9 down to like 2.1 million, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you lose 818,000 jobs?
Just a
we don't have time to talk about that all in this segment, right?
Just an honest accounting error.
Yeah, hey, just whatever, you know, decimal at the wrong place or something like that. Oh my goodness! Well, that's a lot of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we should quick do the math and figure out if 800,000 jobs, let's say on average, those jobs, you know, are like $70,000 a year of income. That's a lot of money. That suddenly just didn't happen and it just got revised away.
That could have been taxes.
Could have been taxes. That's right. So, well.
That's $56
billion. $56 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, we just revised it away. that's right. Well, that's not even funny. We shouldn't laugh about it, but it is. But wow. I mean, that's so significant. I think, you know, everybody's expecting that the Fed is going to cut rates in September. So that's coming up really shortly.
Yeah, it seems everyone's saying that.
Yeah. I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. It seems to me if they cut too much, that would almost be a signal that they're concerned.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm glad I'm not sitting in that seat.
Because if they cut it too much, it's like pointing the plane down. How do you make that soft landing if you're boom,
that's right.
coming straight down?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's talking about a soft landing, but we just like, you know, erased 818,000 jobs.
Yeah.
How is that a soft landing? All these people are, you know, all these companies are laying people off and so on and so
That's
forth.
That's not soft, but I guess you can argue that the trending of the inflation rate has been trickling down.
It's been trickling down.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. The producer price index is due to report out next week. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about the producer price index on the podcast next week. But I would be amazed if the producer price index actually came in lower. But remember, producer price index leads to CPI, and so if producer price index is higher, then really this inflation thing is not really headed where we think it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to take a break. I'm going to tell them about Project Lamplight, James, when we come back.
Yeah, and I think. And I think, you know, we need to figure out a way to get you somewhere where your car can break down.
Yeah, I think I smell a funny smell. Let me go check my car. Hopefully I'm back after the break. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. And Eric is not here today. His car was giving him problems, so he wasn't able to make it to the session. But I'm James, and our guest today here is Dave Hook. Just say hi, Dave.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah. So everybody actually knows there's somebody else here.
That's right.
That's exactly right. You know, if there's only one thing that you take away from today's conversation, we hope that you'll remember that finding ministry and purpose in your vocation can change your life and probably change the world around you as well. Right, Dave?
Yeah, that's a big part of my story.
Yeah, yeah. And this really requires planning and discipline and I think probably self-examination as well.
Yeah.
That can be tough, the self-examination part.
Yeah.
It can be tough. But we're going to be talking about that. But however tough it can be and however it's just not easy, it really does have the potential to change your life. And so, you know, I met Dave. Well, Dave, we met through a common acquaintance, and I will never forget looking up the website projectlamplight.org.
Yeah.
And I was just captivated by the story that here's someone working in real estate as a profession, mm-hmm. taking time and energy and effort to be helping to solve real problems in the community in the way that Project Lamplight does. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we got on the phone together as we were prepping for our conversation today. And I said to you, Dave, you know, tell me about the problem you're solving.
Yeah.
And the first thing you said was,
it's me.
It's me.
Yeah.
And I said, hello? You know, how did that work? Just tell our listeners, you know, how does the problem that we're solving here, you know, Project Lamplight, how's the problem you?
Right? Yeah, it's a good question. You know, when I was in my early journey of business ownership and sales and real estate and all that, I didn't know that I was as broken as I was. Hmm. But I had a relationship with the Lord, and I would like to say it was a good relationship. Yet when I went out into the world and I did my vocation, I was swimming in water that was very competitive, that was very focused on wealth accumulation, that was very focus on gaining influence and achieving your goals and comparing yourself to others. And of course, things like social media and all sorts of other factors play into that.
Right. But that's not really unique.
Right. That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. And I started to gravitate more and more and more. I got my identity from those things, what I had, what I did, and what people thought of me.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I shared with you, I went down to the country of Haiti with my church three different times. And I saw people that seemed more fulfilled with me than I did. They didn't get their identities in those things. Mm. And it was a real contrast to the life that I had built that looked very successful on the outside. And yet on the inside, I felt broken and empty. And that's when I came to the realization that something was wrong and it was me. And that was the impetus or the start of prayer and searching for how can I do a for-profit business with a not-for-profit purpose? How can I get my identity from something bigger than me? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like in the way that I do my vocation?
That's right. You know, we've talked on this podcast about what it means to define success. And we've said that if our definition of success is not in alignment really with our values, that at some point we find that we're climbing this ladder. And we climb and climb, and we get to the top of the ladder, and we discover that the ladder is propped against the wrong wall.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's such a, oh my goodness, what am I doing here? And exactly, you know, how does that work? So you were in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, interestingly, you know, I've been involved in some Haiti missions as well. And, but you were coming back from that experience,
mm-hmm.
And it was like this soul searching that was going on.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually contemplating as we landed the plane back in the States that my wife and I were building a house, and it struck me that we were about to get into a debate over the color of our countertops.
Mm.
And that seemed in such contrast from the village that I had just came from. Like the fact that they would get countertops, some of the families that I was in relationship with,
right.
would have changed their lives. And I was going to argue with my wife about the color of mine. And
right.
it was just this. I put my head into the seat in the flight in front of me, and I just started to pray, and I just started to think, what am I doing? Like, my ladder is against the wrong building.
Hmm.
And that's when we came back, and I decided actually to get out of real estate at the time. That was what I wanted to do in my head, and I wanted to get into ministry.
That's powerful.
Yeah. And so I started to seek counsel from a pastor, a friend of mine, and some other faith-based business friends, and they challenged me in my decision to get out of real estate.
Mm.
They said, you know, your identity issues and the competitiveness and people issues and money and finance and all that, that also exists if you were to go out and start a homeless shelter or some ministry. You can get caught up in those same things. Rather than, you know, run from your vocation to find ministry, what would it look like to find ministry in your vocation using the gifts and talents that you already have?
Yeah, that's such an important point, though, Dave, that you can get caught up in this, it doesn't matter what vocation you're in.
Yeah, right.
Right? You can get caught up in the, hey, I need to be more successful. I need to be better than, you know, whatever my other colleagues in the same if you're running a charity, you're trying to be a bigger, better charity.
Yeah.
If you're clergy, yeah. Oh my goodness, right? I mean, the church can kind of become your whole life.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter what vocation you're in. This whole thing of getting caught up in it's kind of a common human problem.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And I think that was really good wisdom, because the problem wasn't my vocation, it was my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was where I was getting my sense of worth and value.
Right.
And what I was chasing to fill my cup. And all of that led to more and more bondage. And so it was good advice, I think, to stay in my vocation and figure out how to do it differently so I wasn't so captivated by those unhealthy tendencies.
Yeah. Jesus said once that we can... You can't serve God and money.
Yeah.
And it's really tricky.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's this very tricky relationship because we need money.
Yeah.
But it can't become our God.
That's right.
Right.
And it is very easy for that to happen. I was just reading this morning the Treasure Principle, and I think Jesus talks about money and that thought. Over 15% of what he says is related to that. It's more than what he speaks about heaven and hell combined.
Mm.
And that's because I think money is, you know, something that is deeply tied to our spiritual health, and what we do with our money and what we don't do with our money is definitely tied to our spiritual health. And that was true for me and still is a struggle, you know, as I continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But that pivotal moment that we talked about made me relook at my vocation and how we could, again, do a for-profit business with a not-for-profit purpose.
Right. Yeah. And we're going to talk more about that here as we, you know, go through the podcast today. But it's, you know, I've shared this before here on Money and Mission, that we pray and pray, you know, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth mm-hmm. as it is in heaven.
That's right.
Right. And then I think the theologians kind of hate me for what I do next, right? Because I stop right there and say, okay, thy kingdom come on earth just like it is in heaven. Hmm. Like when that happens, something really tangible happens. This is where we write checks out of our checkbook, right? This is where we structure our business plans in a certain way, right? This is where God's kingdom shows up on earth just like it is in heaven.
Isn't that so true? And it's so easy to skip that and to sort of shirk the responsibility as though we're going away somewhere to heaven and we don't have any responsibility here.
Right.
As opposed to step into that. And that's sort of where the rubber hits the road in our spiritual journey. And for me, I think I used to think those thoughts about, you know, on earth as it is in heaven is what I do next is a challenge and it's a rule. And yet when we follow those principles, what I experienced was far more freedom and far less bondage.
Wow.
And I think that is true for our spiritual walk. God has it right. Yeah. When we follow his call for us, it's not because he wants to judge us or condemn us or put us into more slavery. He is the way, the truth, and the life, and is ready to give us more life and more freedom from bondage. And I think that's been my experience in generosity in my vocation.
That's right. And as we do that, as we really lean into that, as you said, we start experiencing a new kind of freedom. And we sometimes we don't even realize the problem is us.
Yeah.
Right? Until we start experiencing what the problem isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone said once that, you know, he said, I don't think God really needs our money so much as we need to let go of it.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. In order to experience freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's exactly right. Well, this is I am really looking forward to, you know, the rest of our time here today. We're getting down to the end of this segment. And each week we do this weekly puzzle, which I think someone told me that this falls under the dad jokes. It falls under the dad jokes category, but we enjoy it. And, you know, it's we're not sure if everybody else enjoys the puzzlers. But last week's puzzle was this. What time is it when an elephant sits on your fence? And Joe, I think you nailed it, right? Didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. what time is it when an elephant sits on your fence? It's time to get a new fence. All right. You know, I'm glad Eric's not here today because he would be sitting over there going, move on, James, move on to the next question. All right. So this week's puzzle is a simple question. What has only two words, but thousands of letters? Right. Only two words, but thousands of letters. Send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. And we will read the correct answer to this week's puzzle on the show next week. We do need to take a quick break. And I think there's a couple of announcements or news and notes. But stay tuned. We're talking with Dave Hook. And we'll be back in just a minute or two. You're listening to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James, and we are talking today with Dave Hook. And just say hi, Dave.
So hi, everybody.
Dave is still here, so he didn't decide to leave after the first segment, right?
That's
right. Said, hey, I think this is kind of okay, right? This actually works. But Project Lamplight is the project that kind of really got us connected here. And let's talk. Oh, you know, I do want to say that if you're listening to the podcast and you didn't have an opportunity to listen to our interview with Cody Hobelman, go back to episode 11. You can find episode 11 by visiting the podcast section of Holy Family Radio, or you can go out to wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com and click into the podcast section there. Or if you're on Spotify, you can find Money in Mission on Spotify as well. So, but, you know, our interview with Cody is like really reminiscent of what we're talking about here today. Mm. And so, but Dave, you know, we were talking about how you were involved in, I mean, you were doing some soul searching and really God was kind of stretching you to put your priorities in a different place.
That's right. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And so just to pick up sort of where the story left off before, mm-hmm. as we searched as to how to do ministry in my vocation.
Right. Not so much changing the vocation.
Nope.
But finding the purpose and ministry inside of what you were doing.
That's right. Again, as opposed to contrast that with leaving my vocation to do ministry as though vocation's the problem. No, my heart was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think God, through prayer, wanted me to take a look at it and look in the mirror a little bit and say,
right.
Okay, you have gifts and talents in that vocation. What does it look like to bring me into that? Mm. And what does it look like to steward finances a little bit differently in the business so that you can have a for-profit business with a not-for-profit purpose? And that was really the first idea. And so we thought about that a little bit, and we didn't have a real complex game plan about this. So bear with me. When we started Project Lamplight, it was really just a few team members that I was working with. And I said, you know, we have this database, as most real estate agents do or brokerages, of people that have bought and sold from us over the years.
Mm-hmm.
People that probably know us, hopefully like us, hopefully trust us. And we're in touch with them. We do client appreciation events and community events and things like that. We invite these folks to that. So we have their contact information. We know what their vocation is. And we call them and invite them to these appreciation events. We send mail to them. We
right.
update them on the economy. I said, instead of being in touch with them and just asking them who they know who's buying or selling a home that they can refer to us, what would it look like just to change the nature of that conversation as we interact with our past clients? And we started with a question, and we were going to call our database, and instead of asking for referrals, we were just going to ask, who do you know in the community with a random urgent need that we can serve? Who do you know in the community with a random urgent need that we can serve?
That's a totally different question.
It's a very different question.
Yeah, then typically if someone's dripping on their customers, right? Yeah, it's a very different kind of question.
Yeah, and it was just really fascinating to us, the responses that we got from our database. Many of them were confused, and I can understand that.
Right, sure.
Why would you ask that? You're in real estate.
Have you guys lost your way?
Yeah, what's going on? But it developed into these rich conversations where we could say, yeah, we're taking a percentage of our profits, and we're able to deposit that into a different account. And, you know, we wanted to go back to the community and say, are there people struggling or suffering that you know, neighbors, people at your workplace, people, family, and people at your church or your social circles? And some of those conversations just were really cool to have a different conversation. Mm-hmm. And so they developed relationship at a deeper level with our past clients. But others did develop into, my goodness, your timing, you know, so-and-so actually that I know down the street just did get into an accident and they're not going to, you know, be able to take care of their electric bill.
Right.
Or whatever the need was. And so that first time I just instructed our staff to go do that. And I gave them, I think, each $50 or so, and they were able to serve a few needs. And then they shared that back with our team in our monthly meeting. And it was just really cool to hear their stories. And it felt like something was changing in the dynamic of our team's culture.
Yeah.
It's not just about helping families with a big investment in a home, which is important, but it's bigger than that. As we're doing more business, we're able to serve people in crisis in the community. And so we made a system out of it and started to donate a larger percentage of that and started to be a little bit more vocal about those conversations. Who do you know in the community? And before long, we asked that question enough times to our past clients that we had to get a little website and an application together and get it streamlined a little bit because
a lot of
needs were out there.
A lot of needs started showing up.
That's right. And mm-hmm. and then the needs would come in and we had to, you know, have a board and get some bylaws and register as a nonprofit and do things the right way.
And do some planning.
Right,
which we've been harping about on this podcast, right? But it really is like, wow, in the planning, you know, God lives in the planning.
That's right. Right. Yeah, that's where the traction is. I mean, we had a vision.
Yeah.
And we were looking at, we want to do a for-profit business with a not-for-profit purpose. Mm-hmm. But then the how do we do that? And it required planning. And then there was traction in that. And yeah. we had to follow through with that. And so now, you know, we'll get a couple to a few applications every week, sometimes as many as 5 to 7 in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the board will review those. Sometimes they'll need to vet those a little bit, make sure it's an appropriate urgent need that meets the mission of the program, and then they can approve it usually within 24 hours. And then if it's a need that came from our database, our past clients, on behalf of somebody they knew, which is really the majority of them, we can deliver that check to the member of our database. And it doesn't have our name on it or anything like that.
Right.
And we just instruct them, let the recipient know, the person that you know that a faith-based local business wanted to bless them. And and text us back how that interaction went.
How that went.
Yeah. And then we're able to celebrate that in our company meetings. We change the names of any applicants for confidentiality. But we're able to say, hey, a couple stories this month that as you guys are in the trenches, you know, mm-hmm. solving problems, stressed out, just know that there's actual life change happening in the community. And it's really cool to be able to partner with our past clients in our database to serve those needs.
Yeah. So what kind of responses did you find from, like, you know, your staff?
Yeah. Well, there is often tears at most team meetings around this agenda. I think a lot of them at first weren't sure if this was going to be something that lasted. I mean, we started this back in 2015-16 and thought, well, this is just a thing that maybe it'll fizzle out. But it grew from
Were you one of these people who would, like, go down little paths and then flame out?
Entrepreneur ever does that.
No entrepreneur ever. That never happens.
Ever has an idea that fizzles out.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm sure to some extent that was their hunch. And yet it grew from 6 or 7 needs that first year to, I think, 153 applications last year. And so it's just really everybody has a different response. But some ask, You know, we have a prayer group now in the office, and we do some Bible study and prayer group. And there's some folks in there that, you know, don't have a belief in God. And I think that it's allowed us to have discussions about why are you giving as a real estate office? And that's really cool for me to be able, I'm not great at talking about my faith in the workplace. I've always struggled with that. So I think it's a good way to just show by doing that's something that's important. Generosity is important, and it strikes up a lot of conversations in the office about that. But then also we do have believers in the office, and this is a way for them to participate in the love of Christ with our neighbors and in their vocation as well. So we've had a lot of conversations around that.
Yeah. And I think it really, you know, it really doesn't matter where you're at spiritually. It is still more blessed to give.
Yeah.
Right. And somehow there's a blessing in giving.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You can be very far along in your spiritual journey or not a believer at all.
Right.
And it's true that it's, you know, when you give, you get to experience joy on the other side of that. And we get to experience that as a workplace multiple times a month.
That's right. Yeah. And so you organized the business plan for giving.
That's exactly right. I mean, there used to be a thermometer that would show, and we have this digitized now, but they review it almost every day, how many homes we're selling and then how many needs we served. Those it's not just how much money we're earning or how many homes we're selling. And it's as we sell more homes, here's how many needs we're serving in Project Lamplight.
Yeah.
And then we have some staff members that now donate themselves to Project Lamplight, not just the company, but they want to contribute. So that's been really cool to see too.
Yeah. So, but coming up with this idea of just helping those with random urgent needs, you know, we only have a couple minutes left in this segment, but how did you land on that as opposed to like, whatever, any other type of idea?
Yeah. I'd like to think it was by design, but it did just sort of happen. And we realized later that it served a specific need. What we realized is in our community, there were a lot of places that provided shelter, food, even Section 8 housing vouchers and things like that. But when somebody was in crisis, a financial crisis due to an accident or something like that, after some research, we realized that one, there isn't anybody around that's able to approve funding to bridge that crisis within like 24 hours. And two, a lot of people that experience crisis that spirals out of control and becomes chronic, it's because they're in a little bit of the debt, which is true for many of us, and they don't have an emergency fund. And so if we can step in 24 to 48 hours, vet it, review it, approve it, and then fund it, sometimes for some people, we'd like to think that we've been able to prevent them from taking, you know, now they've missed a rental payment, now their water shut off, now they turn to, you know, substance abuse, and it goes down further to homelessness. We're able to partner with people and maybe keep them from taking that step just because there's no emergency fund there that can fund them quickly.
Right. Yeah. So there was, you used what was right in front of you, right? And you spotted the needs. And I always really say that, you know, God kind of opens everybody's eyes in a different way to what's right in their own sphere of influence.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we hope our listeners will, you know, stretch their thinking, and what is going to come and get laid on their heart may be different than what was laid on your heart. But this is just a great story that hopefully can encourage people to be doing the same thing. We've got to take another break. You're listening to Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. We're talking with Dave Hook, and we'll be back here again in just a few minutes to talk about some of the amazing things that are happening through Project Lamplight. Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James, and Eric couldn't be with us today, but we're managing. And we're talking with Dave Hook.
Hey, everybody.
And a founder of Project Lamplight. And what an awesome story, Dave, that you've been sharing. But let's talk about Project Lamplight and some of the great things that are happening there. But I'd also like you to talk a little bit mean, early on here in our conversation, you said, you know, I was the problem, mm-hmm. right? Or the problem was me. And, you know, so what are some of the changes that have happened there? And let's see if we can fit all that into the next 12 minutes or so.
That sounds good. Where do you want me to start?
Oh, let's talk about Project Lamplight.
And yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's evolved, of course, and now there's a bit of a system around it. And so we actually get the opportunity to speak at a few real estate conferences to other brokers about how you can run a for-profit real estate organization with a not-for-profit purpose and, mm-hmm. and build a Project Lamplight. In fact, I spoke yesterday to a group of 120 on Zoom. And we actually have a 7-step ministry building video that we share with them on how they can replicate that in their own business.
So you are a highly sought after.
I wouldn't go that far.
That's right. But you do. You get out and you talk to groups on this topic, right?
Yeah,
How it's done.
From other communities all over U.S. and Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different followings in educational conferences. And so, yeah, it's been a really cool part of our business to be able to share. And we've seen it replicated in cities. There's a big Project Lamplight replication in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's one, I believe, in Charleston, Phoenix, I think. And so these brokerages that are bigger than mine have now been able to run the same process. And it's really, really cool too, mm-hmm. and fulfilling to be able to see that. So it has evolved. There is some steps to it. And, you know, I think some of the evolutions that it's gone through and maybe some lessons that I've learned mm-hmm. is that, you know, early on, we didn't have much of a process other than approve the need.
Right.
If you've read anything about when helping hurts,
right.
you know, you can get into helping and it feels good to celebrate that. And it does change your heart. And yet when you drill down into the accountability of it, you ask, what kind of an impact am I actually making here?
Mm-hmm. There's a book called When Helping Hurts.
There is.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and there's also Created to Flourish is another book by Hope International that talks a lot about this as well.
Created to Flourish.
Created to Flourish. Yeah. And and so some of the things that we've learned is are in some of those areas. You know, we went back one time and learned that a number of the needs that we had approved, the application had not, they were disingenuous. They mm-hmm. were using it to fulfill a drug habit. And so we realized that for every applicant, you know, money is not always the best next step.
Right.
And so we've partnered now, realizing that we are not in advocacy and we're not experts in, you know, therapists or advocacy or mental health or addiction issues.
Right.
But we are a bit of a head of a spear when we get applications in our community. We can determine, is this from our database? We know the person. This is a widow, for example, that we serve that had to choose between paying her property taxes and fixing a roof leak.
Okay.
That's easy to approve.
Mm-hmm.
We can vet that. We can approve that pretty quickly. Other times we might get a direct application and we're just, it's hard to get to the bottom of what the actual issue is. And so we're able to tap one of three community partners who are trained professionals, mm-hmm. and they'll go out and meet with the applicant themselves and understand what their need is. And what we found as we've gotten better at that is that money is not always the best next step to help that person.
Right.
And so that professional who's trained to vet might refer them to a financial services to start to create a budget, might help them create resumes to get their next job, and might help enroll the applicant in, a recovery group.
Mm-hmm.
And then might tap Project Lamplight on the shoulder 4 weeks later to say, hey, they're plugged into these areas. We'd like to come back and apply on behalf of this person to get them. And funding is the next best step. So Project Lamplight has evolved that way. We've learned a lot of lessons. We've also gone from different thresholds of what we can approve per family.
Mm.
And, you know, we've put ceilings on that and deviated from that. I think last year it was a lower approval threshold and we approved like 153 approvals last year for over $100,000 given away to people in the community. But we realized our impact per person, our ability to vet was very low. And once we uncovered that, that's when we decided to partner with people in the community that could help us in relationship with the applicants. And we could approve a higher amount per family and say yes to a deeper need than we were. But we're serving fewer families because these people that are vetting them are realizing money isn't the next best step for every single family.
Right. Money is not always the answer.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
So, but embedded in all of that are a lot of really cool stories. Yeah. And so there is a lot to celebrate. I mean, Project Lamplight has been able to serve, I remember, a family that sometimes we don't have our names on the checks that are given, but this family was relentless and found out who it was and asked if they could come to our company meeting. Mm. And they came with their kids. And I'll never forget, she said that the spouse had a back issue and couldn't work for some time. They got behind on some bills. And they have a child with some autistic and some other emotional issues, and was running out into the street out in front. It was a highway. And I'll never forget, they said that social services had found out and was going to take their child away, and they needed to put up a couple thousand dollar fence in their backyard.
Wow.
Because of the safety of the child, and they couldn't afford to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an easy yes,
mm-hmm.
you know, for us to mm-hmm. be able to get a contractor, get a fence put in, and a family gets to stay together, you know, and the child's safe.
Right.
And, you know, we've done everything from approve a prosthetic, an insurance deductible on a prosthetic finger. And we got a picture back of a dad throwing baseball with his son.
Oh, wow.
His finger was taken off at work. And, you know, and we've unfortunately had to pay for your funeral services that couldn't be funded. And everything in between, of course, the utility bills, back rent payments. We've had people who tell us a story that they were homeless and in an abusive situation, and the female took her two kids and ended up sleeping under a bench in our community. And the next day, a pastor walked out of a church, and our community knows of us, and asked for her to come in. And she didn't have a place to stay that night and was scared to go back to their primary residence. And, you know, he applied to put them up in a hotel for a couple weeks, and then he walked with them to get to safety and the next step away from that abusive relationship. So it really feels good to play a role in the community in some of these stories of people in crisis.
Yeah. And these are great, great stories, Dave. But I think I heard you say that, you know, again, there are other brokerages in other geographies that are kind of copycatting and it's almost like almost any business, you know, if you own a business, it takes some planning and takes some discipline and so on and so forth. But almost any business could do this kind of thing in their business.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we found that to be the case. And whether you're a dentist or you're a real estate brokerage or you're a plumber,
but it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You have revenue. You hopefully are generating some profit, and you have customers. Mm-hmm. And those customers, you're serving them at a deep level with whatever need of your industry. And then there's money changing hands for that service, and then you have the opportunity to partner with that customer to serve their friends and family in a deeper way. And it's not that complicated. As it gets bigger, you have to solve problems like we have over the last 9 years.
So don't get discouraged.
Don't get discouraged, because to start out, remember, it was me and four employees in a room, and I gave them each a $50 bill and said, let's find somebody in this financial crisis and come back and share about it.
Right.
And it developed out of that one decision.
Yeah. Wow. That's so exciting. And again, it's changing the lives of not just the people you're touching, but employees as well.
Yeah. And I would say me probably more than anyone. You know, I would say, my wife would say, due to this journey, I've looked at money differently.
Mm-hmm.
I've felt like I've had a more generous heart. I've become, I believe, a better dad, a better husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the way that you decide your decisions about money will affect you spiritually.
Yeah.
And will release you from some bondage, and will have a ripple effect around your family, in this case, my workplace, and thirdly, people who are our recipients in the community.
Yeah, yeah. That's just so powerful and so profound. A changed heart, changed relationships, and meeting needs at the same time. You know, we have just a minute or so left. Would you have any really specific advice, let's say, for a business owner who wants to pursue something like this?
Yeah, two things. One is take one small step. If you're listening to this right now, you could take out a pen and you could write down one next step that you'll take towards giving through your business. And my guess is if you take that step and you decide to do it now and you follow through with it in the next 24 hours, it'll create a domino effect where another step will be taken. And a couple quarters from now, you'll probably have something that is creating change in a really cool way in both your heart and at your workplace. So that's my best advice. And the second best is if you need to learn how to build this, we have a 7-step video. It's 10 minutes long. You can reach out to me on social media channels. You can find me at Dave Hook, David Hook. Just Google Dave Hook Realtor, and you'll see all my social media channels. You can private message me, and I'm happy to have our staff send you the video. There's no charge or anything for that, and happy to be a resource if I can help you in any way.
Yeah, if you have any trouble looking up Dave, just you can send a note to service@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we'll be happy to help make a connection there as well. Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a blessing.
Yeah, this was a delightful conversation, and you know, maybe at some point we can kind of have you back on and just follow up on the story. But again, thanks so much for joining us today. For our listeners, remember to send your answers to this week's puzzle to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. We are looking forward to connecting with you again next week here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. Have a blessed week.